Morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. These things make me nervous. I used to be a college professor and standing behind the lectern and giving the evil teacher stare to the students. So welcome. I'm with Jeffrey Byrne and Associates, and several of our associates are in this room. But first, I want to go around and ask everybody to introduce themselves and the organization they represent. The Energizer Bunny left the room, but I need to get her back. So,
I'm Stacy Bratcher with Immaculata Manor.
Iris Miller, Shepherdson of Raytown.
Geraldine Jones, American Red Cross.
Trudy Galblum, Nonprofit Connect.
Calvin Kaler, City Union Mission.
Jim Graham, El Centro.
Susan Beltrangulo, Children's Center for the Visually Impaired.
Do you want this all on the podcast?
Sally Cook from the Children's Center for the Visually Impaired.
Gail Weinberg from the Jewish Federation.
John Hornbeck, Episcopal Community Services.
Gary Hicks, Grace and Holy Trinity Cathedral.
Lois Rice, CASA, Johnson and Wyandotte Counties.
John Marshall with Jeffrey Byrne and Associates.
Janae Gattelman, Boys and Girls Club.
Johanna Telge, Metro Lutheran Ministry.
Terry Kriege, Associated Youth Services.
Tim Sweeney, Praxis Nonprofit Strategies.
Fred Andrews, Economic Opportunity Foundation.
Jennifer Anderson, Children's Center for the Visually Impaired.
Terry Mueller, Local Initiative Support Corporation.
Sandra Carol Berger, The Children's Place.
Roxanne Hill, The Children's Place.
A great representation here today.
Cynthia Smith, Sunflower House.
Judy Keller, Jeffrey Byrne and Associates.
Patrick Silley, Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
George Robbins, Shepherd Center, Kansas City Central.
Tom Lally with Heartland Habitat for Humanity.
Sarah Guthrie, Child Protection Center.
Gerald Goddard with the KCK Huggers.
Hey, Huggers. Okay, I got to check in on that one. all right, the one question I want to ask, anybody willing to share, is why did you come today? You know, you got the information, but what was that special message you got that inspired you to say, I want to come? Gary's back for the second time. Tom is back for the second time. I mean, they loved it. It was so good. They came back. What they're doing to see if we're still giving the same information. Anyone want to share why they came today? Let's all start looking down at the floor.
Well, Barbara, we selected a different session, and Jennifer basically said, I think that you would benefit from this session, so that's why we're here.
Okay, great. Anyone else want to share?
I always think that if you can learn from colleagues or professionals within our industry, it's the best way to learn.
Great, Gail. Thank you. Anyone else? Well, if you think of you might like to share later on, we'll be happy to hear from you. Because we are going to give you some great information this morning. We believe in the power of partnership with Jeffrey Byrne and Associates. So what we're going to ask you to do today is really partner with us in the presentation instead of just sitting there and absorbing all of this great information. Please ask questions, challenge us if you have a different viewpoint. But we want this to be interactive and not just our giving information to you. I want to share a story, and I know Gary and Tom have heard this, but it was very inspiring to me. Many of you I know in this room know I love spending time in Colorado. I like hiking, trekking. It's just where my heart and soul are. And this summer I was out there, and a friend of mine runs the local Salvation Army. And I kept reading about in the local paper, the Vail Daily, hot off the press each day, about a empty bowl luncheon. And this, what I found out was put together in a, I think, a two-month period, two-month period, by volunteers. The staff at the Salvation Army had little or no involvement in it. They were trying to just keep the pantry going and take care of the clients that were coming in. So I signed up to go to this empty soup bowl lunch. And as I walked in, you were given literally an empty soup bowl. And then four of the finer restaurants in the valley donated soup that you ate out of your bowl. And then you took it home then to remind you. It sits on my desk. So it reminds me every day that there are people in this community, and a very affluent community, that are going hungry. When I shared this story, I think, with the first session, Jennifer told me that the same thing is done by students and has been done for several years at Shawnee Mission East. So see the power of a group of volunteers. See the power of youth, and when they take on a project and make it happen. This is, you know, I'm sure each one of you has a story that that inspires you. For whatever reason, this really tugged at my heartstrings, and I love telling people about it. The fact that in a two-hour period, the Salvation Army made $9,000, and they ran out of soup. They wanted, you know, 200. They expected 200 and 300 showed up. So I don't know what the last 100 had to eat, but they didn't seem to be unhappy. So one other thing we would like for you to do is, if you haven't already, is to put your first name. Stacy's done a splendid job here of putting your first name in big letters. That's really to help me see who you are. So if you're not going to talk much, I'm going to call on you to get some information. The final thing is this cell phone. Everybody have one? Okay. Here's the deal. You can turn it off now, or if it goes off during the session, we will ask you to write a $100 check to your favorite charity, which I hope is yours, the one you represent. And once you know, we want to see you do it, and we will give you great applause for doing that. Now, there's a purse up front that has been ringing. It's kind of a chartreuse one, so whoever that is, if you're wanting to donate $100, let it keep ringing. Otherwise, you better turn it off. So this started out as a joke, really. But one, not here, but in a couple of sessions I did out of the city, one time I got $600 worth of checks, and the next time $400 worth of checks. So I'm not telling anybody anymore. It's a joke, you know. It works for me. All right. One final comment. You saw many of us that are here from Jeffrey Burnin Associates. At any time you want to contact us, our information is in your handouts. We'll be happy to help you or answer questions. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to John Marshall.
Good morning. Good morning. Listening to Barbara talk about the Salvation Army reminded me that I started my career with the Salvation Army way back in 1976. And the soup story reminded me of one of the events that we did. This was in New York City, and they had Tag Day. And Tag Day, they still do. And what they do is they go out on the street and have a little tag that is in the form of a donut, and it says, support the Salvation Army. And it's kind of like Poppy Day or wherever. There's some other organizations that do that. And, of course, the donut with the Salvation Army goes back to World War I, when the Army sent over contingents of volunteers, many of them young women, who were affectionately referred to as the donut dollies. And one of the things that we passed out along with those tags that day was the original recipe donut that was distributed in World War I. They were awful. Literally awful. And then I realized the reason they were awful was, not many people know that the deciding factor in World War I were those donuts. because the Allies, realizing how awful those donuts were, threw them into the German trenches, and they all came out with their hands up. We surrender. That's not true, but it does give me a lot of pleasure in telling. We're glad you're here today. Philanthropy in America, I don't think anybody in this room can argue with the fact that philanthropy, giving, is an integral part of the fabric of this country in terms of its economy. It is a major industry. There are hundreds and hundreds of thousands of not-for-profits. In fact, I think it's well over a million now, all over the United States, each of them out to do good and needing to raise money to do that good. We in this country are very interested in philanthropy. We have been ever since we first started tracking it, kind of loosely, but the first evidence of tracking it had to do with around World War I. There was so much money being given for the war effort, and suddenly a lot of organizations cropped up and were out seeking funds, and it needed to be really closely monitored because, as you can imagine, there were probably a few of those organizations that weren't organizations at all and were out there collecting monies illegally. But it was 54 years ago that the very first Giving USA report was published, 54 years ago. The Giving Institute does that. It's not known as the Giving Institute now. Jennifer, what is it referred to as? Yeah, the Giving USA Foundation, of which the Giving Institute is a part of, publishes this report. So it's 54 years old. And that really is the beginning of very closely monitoring, recording, measuring philanthropy in this country. Philanthropy has grown in leaps and bounds since that time, 54 years ago, 1955. We're going to talk today a lot about what is happening in Kansas City. I'm going to talk a little bit about giving across the country, but we're really here today to talk about giving in Kansas City. So that'll probably be about 90% of our presentation today. What you're going to hear or what you're going to receive today is information from the studies. That's what the Giving USA really is. It's a study of philanthropy. And the Kansas City Giving 2008 is a study of philanthropy here in Kansas City. We're going to reveal to you what was coming from the four categories of contributors: individuals, corporations, foundations, and estate giving, which of course is related to individual, but it is different, and you'll see why in a moment. And then we'll show you how the nine recipients, the charitable recipients of those funds, fared. Who got the biggest slice of the pie? Who got the smallest slice of the pie? Et cetera, et cetera. So I'm going to get started here. You already know where we're here. Take a look at philanthropy in 2008. This is all in your booklet if you'd like to follow along. If you're wondering where the money is, you need only look at this slide. 75% nationally, this is nationally, not Kansas City now. We'll start with Giving USA nationally. 75% of all giving comes from individuals. If you throw in the 7% from bequests, which of course comes from individuals, take a look at how much of the pie is given by people like you and me. If you are wondering how you're going to meet your year-end goal, or if you're wondering how you need to position yourself strategically planning for next year or the next 5 or 10 years, take a look at this pie. You need to be focusing on individuals. So many people think that corporations and foundations are doing the lion's share of giving. They're not. 82% coming from people just like you and me. And where is it going? It's in your book if you can't see this too well. But it's interesting to note that religion gets a huge chunk of the pie, 35% nationally, almost a third, more than a third of dollars contributed go to religion. Now, look at public society benefits. Some of you are here representing that group, 8%, and human services, 9%. Those are I think, the fourth and the fifth largest sector to receive support. Education gets a nice big slice of the pie, and as does gifts to foundations, and these are grant-making foundations. Now, let's talk about Kansas City. What a tremendous environment you are in to apply and to practice your profession. I don't know if there are statistics that talk about per capita the number of charities within a community. But I can imagine if there were, that Kansas City would be way up towards the top. 7,500 charitable organizations just in the greater Kansas City area, all striving to do good and all needing to raise money. Am I right? Because if you have no margin, you have no what? No mission. I would encourage you to remember that when you're talking with your boards and you're trying to get them to assist you in raising money. And you simply need to say, we need the margin to support the mission. It's pretty simple. The three great things we've got going for us here in Kansas City are the three bullet points you see next. Household giving. Now, household giving is individual giving, okay? We'll go back to the previous slide, 75% nationally. I'm going to show you what it is here in Kansas City shortly. But Kansas City households, individuals, give at a higher rate than the national average by 50%. Isn't that amazing? 50% more given by individuals. Kansas City foundations give more than the average nationally. And Kansas City corporations also give similarly. Now let's take a look at the sources of contributions compared to the United States. Actually, and Kansas City in dark blue, United States overall in light blue. Actually, in Kansas City, there are less households giving to overall of the pie than you see nationally. But take a look at foundations. It is a significant increase over the national average in terms of how foundations support charities here in town. Take a look at corporations. That is significant as well. 5% nationally, 7% here in Kansas City. Bequests, a little different. Now, it's hard to measure bequests, really, because bequests depend on what? People passing away. And you never know when that's going to happen. You can't really move forward on it unless you look at, say, 10, 20-year projections on estate revenues coming into your organization. Some organizations do that, particularly the larger ones. But in this case, we see that bequests were larger nationally than they were here in Kansas City. Now, here's what I like to look at. Take a look at the various. I talked about the 9 beneficiaries. Look at religion. Here in Kansas City, religion gets 42% of the pie. Human services, 16%. Public society benefit, 14%. Now, public society benefit, twice the national average, and human services about the same, only slightly less. But religion, we had this presentation with the religious sector the other day, and I think they were quite surprised to see that here in Kansas City, religion gets such a significant piece of the pie. Source of giving in Kansas City by sector, take a look at the top 4 areas. The dark is households, foundations, bequests, corporations. I really want to emphasize again to you the significance of individual giving. You need only look at religion again. Just about all of the support for religion is coming from individuals. But for human services and the public society benefit, it's over 60%. So if you are thinking, I've got to focus on corporations and foundations and special events, you need to look at this a little more closely and figure out, how do I get into my database and look at those who have been giving for years and figure out who are our best prospects? And what do I need to do to get in front of those individuals? And if I don't think I have the cachet to do that, then who on my board or what volunteer who is working with us can help us reach out to the very affluent individuals? Foundation giving. Look, we did some research recently about foundation giving. And the Chronicle of Philanthropy reported in March of this year a study it did with 73 foundation executives about what they thought would be happening in terms of their giving through the remainder of 2009 and into 2010. And just a second, George. 39 of those 73 said they expected to give less throughout 2009 and into 2010. 39 said less. 14 said that they would probably give about the same if they could. And 12, the remainder, I think that math does right. Anyway, the remainder said, we're going to try and give more, but, you know, the jury is still out. The foundations are really struggling to continue to do what they are supposed to be doing, and that is giving support to charities in their community. They really are, but they're doing some good things. Number one, many of them are having to go into corpus. They don't want to do that, but they have commitments that they have to make and want to make, and so corpus is being invaded. Number two, they're reducing administrative costs. There are people who are being let go from foundation staffs just so they can cut costs back to be able to continue to give. But here's the third thing that's most important to you all here. They are paring down the number of grants that they're giving. And they are going to have to decide who they want to support and who they can't support. And I'm here to tell you, those charitable organizations that have done a strong job of relationship building with foundations are going to survive this downturn in foundation giving. If you're a charitable organization that has just been submitting once a year, thinking you're on the most favored nation status list, all bets are off on that. So I would encourage you to be spending time positioning yourself even more strongly with foundations for Georgia.
What percentage of the foundations that you're talking about are what I would call true foundations with a board and committees and stuff versus family foundation? It's really individual giving, but it's called a foundation.
I don't know the statistics on that, George. I can find that out for you, but my guess is it's all over the place. You know, the top five foundations in this community of Kansas City are all highly structured, board-governed foundations. But you've got little, I'll just call them mom-and-pop individual foundations that rely on leadership of family members. And there's just, you know, hundreds of those, literally. So it's very hard to say. Jennifer, you got any thoughts on that?
That's a good point, John, and I know Lori will concur. When you look at foundations that are controlled by individuals, the amount of money in Kansas City that is controlled by individuals living through their estates or family foundations, I think goes up to about 88% of the pie. Mm. Now, I'll talk a little bit when I get up about what we heard from the Funders Forum here and what they were saying, which I think is good news for human services, about their interest in funding. But much of what John is referring to from the Chronicle study is something that you need to be aware of. It's still available online, and you need to go online and understand how the funders, the institutional funders, the foundations are looking at that. So in answer to your question, George, the majority of them are going to be more of the traditional foundations, but you got to pay attention to the family-run foundations as well.
Pay attention to all of them, but particularly the family-run, because they tend to get into those patterns of only just supporting a few, and then you do get on that list. As I said, that's kind of out the door this year, but you really need to do everything you can to establish an even stronger relationship. You take a look at this chart here. This is Kansas City Foundation giving. $393 million, not an insignificant piece of the total pie. You can see that education gets the largest piece of the pie. Education seems to be a real favorite with the foundation sector. I think education does an extraordinary job in recognition. You'll see a lot of foundation names in universities or colleges or what have you. But the two sectors that are involved here are not doing badly either. Public society benefit, 18%. And human services, 11%. Human services, less so. It seems though as foundations are, for whatever reason, giving less to your sector as opposed to the corporate sector. The corporate sector is being very supportive of human services, and we'll show that in just a moment. So a piece that shows you how the pie breaks down. This kind of gives you an idea of average giving by the foundations. By the way, that asterisk in the top, I don't know how that found its way in there. I went back into the original report. And
it refers to one outlier, a very large okay. Grant that was given to an international organization
okay.
that skewed the average for that.
So did they take it out or did they leave it in?
It's left in.
Okay. All right. Very good. So forget about international. Who cares about international? We're worried about Kansas City. But you can see that in terms of human services, you're at the bottom of the list in terms of the average gift, $14,366. If you're banking on a foundation, the foundation sector, according to this information, if you're banking on the foundation sector to really save you from whether you're going to reach your goal either year end or next year, again, go back and take a look at the slice of the pie. Only 11%. $1 in $9 donated going to your sector. And then the smallest average gift of the nine different charitable sectors. You need to rethink your strategy on that as well. Public society benefit, $30,214 average. Pretty good. Now, keep in mind, public society benefit are United Way, community foundations, United Jewish Appeals, United Jewish Federation, and several like organizations. They tend to do very well, and foundations obviously are supporting them accordingly. Corporate giving is interesting. If you're wondering what you should be asking them for, this graphic pie chart should really answer that for you. 71% of corporations report that they're giving to support your annual fund. Yeah, it is interesting. I saw your lips. I am a professional lip reader, by the way. Thank you very much. And I, by the way, I know what you said back there, too, and I didn't appreciate it. I'm just kidding. 71% in annual support, which I think you really need to pay attention to. And look at the second largest slice of the pie, in-kind support. Put the two together, and corporations are giving 87% either through to annual support or in-kind. So for events, for honorary gifts, for capital campaign gifts, they're not giving nearly as much. Why is that? Because they want more of a bang for their buck. They like that recognition. I mean, corporations, I really believe they have a very altruistic outlook on life, but keep in mind, they need to promote sales by showing that they are strong supporters within the community. Here's just a slide that talks about Kansas City Charities. Report $150 million received from corporate funders, and it breaks it down in terms of the size of the charities. You have large, medium, and small, and a large is a charity that reports $1 million plus in revenues. $25 to $9.99 is medium, and small is $1 to $24,999. And you can see that the larger not-for-profits tend to do much better than the much smaller, which is, you know, unfortunate if you work for a very small corporation or a very small not-for-profit. But the large not-for-profits have the resources and the person power, human power, to go out and be more effective, perhaps, in raising corporate dollars. Now, there are 22 corporations here in Kansas City that have their own foundations, just 22, okay? And those 22 last year gave out $19 million. Not a huge amount, but something to keep in mind. There are, in many cases, corporations with these foundations that look upon that as a second pie. You need to write a check for who's is that? Is that yours?
Mystery.
The mystery one, okay. It's probably Lori's. She just doesn't want to admit it. And many of these corporations with foundations have two giving pots. You have that marketing pot, okay, and they like to draw on that to support special events and things more out and much more of a public awareness. And then their foundations give to very specific things, projects, capital campaign. So there's not a lot of them, but you should pay attention to them. This chart simply demonstrates where that is going. And health and human services got combined for some reason here, and it's over 50% going from these foundations to that. But take a look at public, society, and benefits. Doesn't appear as though, for those of you who are representing that sector, that there's much need to go, only 3% going to that. Giving by Kansas City donor households, this is the section that I'm most interested in. Because, again, I think that is where the greatest potential for increasing your fundraising lies. Take a look at this chart. You can see who is leading the pack. It's religion. 58% of all giving from households, from individuals, goes to churches. But the good news is that the public, society, benefit, and basic needs, which is human services, are second and third in that regard, with 12% for human services and 11% for public, society, benefit. So individuals are being supportive of your sector as well, but keep in mind that it appears as though church and their religion is extremely important to them. Again, household giving, phenomenally important here in Kansas City. I love this chart. It just shows how incredibly generous households are. And this is all households. It's not just households that give. It's all households. So whether a household gave or not, the average per household in Kansas City, look at how much more it was than the national average. That just knocks my socks off. It just says to me again, Kansas Cityans care deeply about people within the community. I'm always interested in income range as well. I don't know if this comes into play with you and when you're prospecting, when you're thinking about who should I go after. But here is income range from $50,000 and below, $50,000 to $100,000 and $100,000 and above. Now, with the $50,000 and below, we're about on par with national, just a slight difference, not really enough to really make any conclusions with. But with the $50,000 to $100,000 range, an increase in giving over the national average of about $500, that's about 25% higher than what's given nationally. But take a look at the folks who are making over $100,000. Look at the increase there. National average of $4,265. Average here in Kansas City, $76,000. That's about a 72% increase, I believe, over the national average. We got three really great things going for us in Kansas City with Kansas Cityans, okay? Number one, there are more Kansas Cityans earning $100,000 or more than you find at the national average. It's like 16.8% of Kansas Cityans are making $100,000 or more. That's substantial. No, yes?
Household number.
Number two, we know that Kansas Cityans, there are more Kansas Cityans in the top paying professions than the national average. It's like 18.1% are in the top professions here in Kansas City. And lastly is education. 31% of households are led by an individual with a college degree. That is way ahead of the national average. So we've got better paid individuals, better educated individuals, and people in better jobs here in Kansas City than compare with the national average. That has a phenomenal impact on household giving. Here's the education. Just take a look at the education. Those with a college degree, wow. I mean, that's like an 80% increase over the national average. With some college about the same, without college, high school or lower, Kansas Cityans still give more, but I am absolutely blown away with what college graduates are doing. And so who are you gonna focus on? Take a look at the age range as well. Those 40 years of age or younger compared to the national average, that's almost twice. The 40 to 64 age group, almost $2,000 more average gift than what you find nationally. The 65 and older, just slightly ahead of the scale here in Kansas City. Maybe folks, because they're on a fixed income, or maybe they're giving through their wills, or could be just a multitude of reasons. But it's that 40 to 64 group. I mean, those are the guys who are in the top-paying jobs. Those are the guys and gals, top-paying jobs. Those are the folks that are making the most money, and those are the folks who are the most educated. So, yes, ma'am. Kansas City's earning more than $100,000. I think I said 16.1 at 16.8. Okay? And there are more people in Kansas City in higher paying jobs than the national average. The average here is 18%. Not sure what it is nationally. And 31% of those in households have college degrees, which is much, much larger than the national average. I'm sorry, I don't have the national average figures with me. I am coming down the home stretch here, and Lori's going to be next. Let's just talk very briefly about bequest giving. Very hard to measure bequest giving because it's up and down, and it all depends on who dies and how much they left. But we know that in Kansas City, charitable organizations last year reported receiving an average of about $25,000 per bequest. Okay? $25,000. Now, that could be just one bequest. Or it could be, like, if it's KU, it could be many, 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 many. But the average was $25,000. And it's going to education, prominently 37%. Human services, though, 22%. So if you have planned giving programs, keep them going. Because 22% of reported revenues came from bequests for human services. Public society benefit not too far behind at 14%. Now, look, $2.15 billion given here in Kansas City. 42% of that from individuals. Focus on households. That's important to you. Nationally, $307.65 billion given last year in 08. Year before, by the way, that figure was $314 billion. So we had a 2% slide. 2% slide. First time that's happened since 1987, by the way. And if you adjust it for inflation-adjusted dollars, it's the largest decline since we've been keeping these records since 1954. And that adjusted rate is 5.7%. But the good news is that with regard to gross domestic product, GDP, it's still strong. 2 years ago, when we set the all-time record for giving and philanthropy, philanthropy was 2.3% of GDP. Last year, 2.2%. So giving is still very strong. You still need to stay focused on going after major gifts. You don't want to lose sight on foundation giving. You don't want to lose sight on corporate giving, particularly here in Kansas City because it's so strong. That's the end of my presentation. I'd like to invite Lori Larson to come on up. She's going to share with you some very pertinent information. I'd be happy to stay afterwards, and if any of you have any questions in particular about what I presented, I'd be happy to chat with you. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Good morning. Thank you all again for attending this morning. We're so glad that you're here. We are going to shift gears just a little bit. We've talked a lot about giving in Kansas City from a charitable giving point of view, meaning we've been concentrating on individuals, foundations, corporations, and bequests. And so now what we're going to do is talk a little bit more about the economic impact of the nonprofit sector here in Kansas City, and also focusing especially on human services and public benefit. The slide that you see here is the big picture look of the landscape of the nonprofit sector in Kansas City. We've got two things going on here. The lighter blue bars are the total percent of organizations, and then the darker blue is the percent that each of these sectors generate as far as revenue. I've highlighted public benefit and human services in the purple so you can see them a little bit easier. John told you about how strong both of your sectors are performing in charitable giving, and this stays very consistent when we talk about economic impact. What we add to the mix in economic impact is government grants and earned revenue. So now we're covering all sources of revenue that you receive in your organizations. If you combine human services and public benefit, you all are generating about 37% of the total nonprofit economy in Kansas City, which is very significant. And you are also consisting of about 44% of all the nonprofits in the Kansas City area. As John mentioned, we have about 7,500 of those, and about half are filing 990. So this is going to be taking all the revenue information from those about 3,500. The human services and public sector in Kansas City is very unique because we have a lot of foundations. And so these next couple of slides, we're going to separate human services and public benefit so you can get a little bit better picture of how your own organizations fit into this picture. So what you see here are the top eight highest revenue subsectors for human services. You can see that 36% of the human services revenue is being generated by these top three sectors over on the far left. And that's only about 9% of the organization. So that's a little bit of a shift of dynamics that we have here. Now, if we look at public benefit, it's not surprising that because of the strong foundation landscape that we have here, these top five economic impact sectors are basically coming from the really large grant making and foundation. And so what I'm going to do now is these are the top five. If we exclude all the foundations, these are the next subsectors that are generating revenue from public benefit. So the foundations account for about 93% of all the public benefit revenue. And then excluding those, we've still got a good chunk. We've got about 46% of the revenue being generated by these other top three sectors and about 16% of the organizations. Now, it's also really important when we think about economic impact to also consider social impact. Sometimes people have a tendency to jump to conclusions when they see slides like this, where maybe a subsector is generating a tremendous amount of revenue versus smaller number of orgs, and then vice versa. If you have a very large number of organizations, it doesn't seem to be generating the economic impact. And the important thing to remember about this is the social impact. We have this challenge also when we talk about religious giving. Trying to measure social impact in actual hard dollars can be very challenging. So when you look at this, this is a really good chance to think about the programs that you have going on in your organizations. One of the things that's very important is, are you equipping your board, your staff, your volunteers with the great stories that you have and the anecdotes about success stories with clients that you've served? All of the fundraising can't just fall on the fundraising professionals. You have to really use the aspect of teamwork to get your message out there. So make sure that you do have some really good outcome stories and share those as well beyond just your financial success as well. This is a slide that takes into account the really wide diversity that we have, and we have now combined public benefit and human services back together again. So you can see that there really isn't any particular annual budget range that is really dominating. It's really pretty flat and very diverse. If we bundle these ranges together a little bit more, we're going to see that almost half of all the organizations in these two sectors are generating about 50%, are operating with revenues of less than $500,000. So this is a really great picture of how the smaller organizations in these two sectors are really helping to contribute to the overall impact of the sector, which is very important. One of the things, talking about smaller orgs, our volunteer force is very important regardless of our size, but there is some really great information coming out about how important volunteers are to helping the sustainability of our nonprofits. Two of the things that you can do to help improve your volunteer force is to make sure that you recognize the work that they do and give them affirmation of what they're doing. Also, making sure that they're continually trained and feel like they're supported. We're facing a lot of different challenges, new challenges, and more challenges in trying to serve our clients. So making sure that our volunteers feel really competent and confident to meet those changing needs. We also know that volunteers have a tendency to give more financially. Now, some of the volunteers that we have may not have the big dollar financial capability. Some may have none. But one of the things that you can do is leverage the small amount of gifts. If you can create a visual for your volunteers, if they have $5 to give and you partner and you leverage that with another 9 volunteers, what kind of change can you visualize for them with putting that into charitable giving into your organization? For example, will it buy a week's worth of food for a family of 4? Will it provide an overnight stay, you know, for a homeless individual for 2 weeks? Whatever that looks like. But if you can create some of these visual pictures, because people want to give and are motivated to give when they know that they can create impact and their $5 or their gift, no matter how small, can really make a difference in the community. And that's one of the biggest motivators that people have to give. The other thing I want to mention before we move on to the other slide is working with for-profits and other organizations that are in your community. This is another really great opportunity to build your volunteers. There are all sorts of win-win combinations in working with for-profits. This is a really big culture change. Businesses, not necessarily the larger corporations, but even the smaller, you know, proprietorships in your neighborhood, they are looking for ways they can better market their company, brand their company, and increase their employee commitment. Turnover is a really difficult and expensive thing for nonprofits and for-profits. So one of the ways that employee loyalty and commitment and a culture of an organization can grow is through volunteer work and partnering with a for-profit. And then again, as you bring in those volunteers from that organization, hopefully that you can move them through the pipeline. They'll start giving financially, and you can wrap them into your own family of giving. So the variety of things you can do there with for-profits as well. This slide shows us basically how many organizations are at least breaking even. Are you able to pay your expenses with your revenue? And you can see here that we've got about 75%, and again, this is looking at all of human services and public benefit, have a break-even point. We've got a few that are operating kind of borderline, and then a few more that are not making it. So this chart really begs the question of endowments. Do you have endowments? What is the capacity of those endowments and the restrictions? If you are borderline and struggling on how to make ends meet on an annual basis, how are you going to sustain this over a long period of time? How are your temporary and restricted assets playing into this? What's the timing and that type of thing? And also, are you being able to manage your current year expenses by going into previous year's surplus? So a lot of things to look at as far as long-term opportunity and sustainability. But again, as we look to minimize expenses, increasing demands and needs in our economy, how can we really do this the most efficiently? And that's really the difficult question. And this really kind of takes us into the next step of what I kind of like to call the wisdom of the crowds. And John touched on this a little bit as well. We hear it all the time, but are we really taking it into consideration? And when I say the wisdom of the crowds, everything from very casual networking, attending a nonprofit Connect learning circle, working with other organizations, maybe geographically different from you but have similar programs than you. You can learn from each other, sharing resources, partnering, again, with for-profits or other organizations in your community where maybe they could provide some additional resources, whatever that may look like, whether it's staff help, accounting help. There's a variety of different options that we can look at, and this is a really important movement, I think. It also creates great stories. If you are really thinking out of the box and being entrepreneurial and trying to minimize your expenses and expand your programs and your social impact, telling your funders and your donors about these types of stories is another great thing that they like to hear, because you're trying to move ahead and create better ways to do and achieve your mission. This slide really shows the investment of human services and public benefit in human capital. You can see that the social assistance that's partnered with healthcare is really one of the lower areas of the workforce. And this is very reflective. This is a huge demand field. Human services, public society, and even some of the religious type organizations, you have a lot of overlap in the programs that you do, meeting basic human needs and that type of thing. So it's a really hard job. Your volunteers and your partnerships and your collaborations are going to be very helpful. They're challenging, but will be very helpful in helping us move forward so we can stay sustainable. Another opportunity for donors are maybe your employees. Are you, again, creating that visual of a small gift of $5, what that looks like multiplied by 9 and the difference it can make in your mission? Also, giving circles. And I want to mention the importance of strong board governance and support. We can't talk about it enough. Your board members should really be your ambassadors out there sharing your mission. They should all be equipped with very simple message points of stories and how you've achieved your mission, just success stories with clients, but really engage your board, fundraising, and sharing your message. And have you thought about talking to your board about creating their own giving circles? Of course, that would benefit your own nonprofit. They know lots of people. And you want to get that message out there in the most vast way possible. This is my last slide. And what this shows us is what the primary revenue sources are of human services and public benefit based on the number of full-time employee equivalents. So if you look at the left side of the slide, you're going to see that the smaller organizations are more dependent on charitable giving. And then as you move to the right of the slide, you see the larger organizations, and they become more dependent on earned revenue and government grants. And this is really pretty typical across all sectors. So the question here on this slide is, it's very important for all of us to know what our financials of our organizations look like. Where are our financial resources coming from? Do we have at least 3 different sources? If you're really being dependent on, for example, foundations, think very creatively about how you can move back out more into individual giving, because that is where the majority of the dollars go. That just doesn't change from year to year. It's very consistent. So if you know where your revenue sources are coming from, do they follow these trends? Well, we're in a very atypical market right now, so maybe they shouldn't necessarily follow these trends. Are there ways as a smaller organization that you can partner, again, with for-profits or other association or other organizations to create some earned revenue? On the flip side, if you're a larger organization and you're very dependent on government grants and programmed or earned revenue, what are the opportunities that you can generate in charitable giving? So that completes my presentation, and I'm going to hand it over to Jennifer.
Good morning. I have some reflections here. Going back a slide or two, Lori is talking about what percentage you, the sector makes up of the workforce. And I'm going to guess that none of the people here needed to be told that you're doing a heck of a lot with a heck of a little. When we put this together a year, year and a half ago, and envisioned that it would be important to make the information on giving in Kansas City meaningful, we didn't foresee unprecedented circumstances that started about a year ago and that I know all of us have been struggling through. My personal background in nonprofit work was in the social services field, and that is where my heart is when it comes to personal giving. So I'm here to say I feel your pain. But interestingly, when it came to the survey results, and that's what I'm going to go through with you and give some reflections, it's not all bad news. Now, let's look at those of you who responded. Let's look at what the demographics of the group suggested. Most of you were smaller organizations, meaning budgets of under $5 million. And when it came to reporting your fundraising for early this year, the first half of the year, a quarter of you have experienced a decrease. 60% at least were holding your own. There are, I think, some interplays here that are suggested by those of you who are in the audience between giving to human services and giving to faith-based causes. And the news for human services, maybe not reflected here in the written slides, is that of all the giving, donors today, since last fall, understand your needs and are willing to reach into their pockets deeper to help you address critical human needs. I was speaking with John Hornbeck before the session, and he was talking about the piece on the news this weekend with the food bank and the, 40-50% increase in demand at Episcopal Community Services for their food bank. I see my friend Calvin Kaler from City Union Mission nodding his head. When we were first working on their major capital project, we'd talk about a 42% increase in demand. And what is it now, Calvin? So 20% per month in terms of the demand, and talking about not being able to accommodate roughly 40 to 50 families despite doubling your capacity as of January. And I bet each and every one of us can tell that story in different aspects, in different ways. When I was speaking with Iris from Shepherd Center in Raytown before the session, Iris was saying, you know, we need to get out. We understand that we need to get out and connect with new constituencies, but how do we do that? So I'm going to take you through a couple of these slides, and I'd really like to hear more questions from you and challenges from you. I think the big thing that you need to play up is that when it comes to giving to human services, to public society benefit, it's the people factor. It's your case for support. It's doing what Lori said, making it real, and being able to gather and tell those human stories in a way individual donors can relate to, meaning representatives of foundations, corporations, and families who give to you, as well as ways you can translate that in the media. And I apologize. We've got a question back here. I'm going to ask Barbara to go back. And is it Tim? Okay. Couldn't see your name placard.
Based on your comments, I'm a bit surprised based on the national data, because it showed a decrease in human in health services in the 2008 data. Why the difference in kind of your perspective and what was happening nationally?
Sure. And I think what you're seeing was not a decrease in giving to human services nationally, but a smaller share of the pie. So I think that if we're looking at this data, we need to be careful as to what we're translating. But very clearly, and this was highly apparent in the Funders Forum roundtable that we had here in September that Michelle and Nonprofit Connect helped sponsor, the donors and the foundation community here in Kansas City particularly had a distinct change in direction, recognizing human services and human needs as it was becoming really apparent here at the end of the year. So keep in mind that national data, you're looking at giving in earlier 2000, or giving in 2008. The Giving in Kansas City report, you're looking at giving in 2007 by nature of how the research had to be performed. And then what we're looking at here is more contemporary reports of the first half of 2009, late 2008 and first half of 2009.
So you think that trend probably would change, that Health and Human Services would probably grow based on what you're hearing from local funders, at least?
That's what we're hearing in very real terms and continuing to hear today. Now, there's some downside to that with respect to where you're putting your emphasis. 65% of you, let's see if I can find that, 65% of you said you have increased the number of grants you applied for. Well, keep in mind what your return on investment is there. And I think if there's a message that you need to carry away today, that is get a broadened base of support. So I'm going to go back here just a minute, and it looks like.
Okay. I'll keep my comment to another time.
But the case for support is really what you need to be focusing in on. Just quickly, when we're looking at what your behavior has been in terms of how you focus that with fundraising, you can see, actually not some bad news here, that you have, in terms of retention and acquisition, meaning keeping old donors and getting new donors, you generally have been able to leverage larger size gifts. And your peers in the room who reported were able to at least maintain giving levels. Some have reported increases from past supporters. I think two pieces here that were interesting were the 31% who reported an increase in online giving, yet a third of you are not offering online giving at all. Okay, so we all talk about generational giving, and John talked about reaching donors that are in the 40 to 64 age range. Maybe even younger donors who are catching the curve. I don't want you to come out of here and go back to your boards and say, we got to do social media. But what small things can you do to make yourself more available and more accessible to donors who want to give in different types of ways? What are you doing to raise the consciousness? Direct mail as a traditional way to do it. We're all getting ready to do our annual fund requests, right? And you can see here that the results on direct mail last year were mixed. In fact, some of the reports about the decrease in human services giving overall last year were directly related in the national reports to the fact that much of what we do in this sector is based on year-end appeals, Salvation Army kettle campaigns, mailings at the end of the year. Some people actually chose not to. Some organizations chose not to move forward with their fundraising campaigns. Bad move. After 9/11, those who held back on fundraising 18 months later found their annual fundraising down 46 to 54%. That was reported in the Chronicle last spring. So when your board is saying, oh, let's cut back on fundraising expenses, just keep that little statistic in your hip pocket. As you reported it, you can see that the foundation community that you're approaching actually has been responding. There has been that recognition of the need in programming support. You can also see that generally, as you've reported it back, at least half of you have been able to maintain funding levels for operating support. Special events may not be producing as much net income, but your attendance has remained steady, and if you are reliant on special events as a fundraising tool, it's really important. Get those folks there and keep them coming. Understand what the role of the special event is this year. Understand that you may need to trim expenses to be able to keep the net proceeds even back with your organization, but keep the attendance up. As you reported your top challenges and opportunities, stimulus funding was certainly a big in terms of your top of mind. More donors and aging donors are a concern. Standing out in a crowd and not having cultivated donors and volunteers. Who in here has struggled with finding stimulus funds? Raise your hands. Yeah, okay. I did a little bit of research, and KCMO website is showing, what, about almost $200 million in stimulus funds coming to Kansas City. KCK in Wyandotte County through the Unified Governments is reporting about $23 million. Olathe reporting about $8 million. But it's going to very, very isolated programs. Now, when you look at the topics there, there's homelessness and homelessness prevention. There is some job training. There's some green jobs. And I do encourage you to explore avenues to be able to tap into that. But stimulus funds are clearly not the panacea that we thought that they might be. The Center on Philanthropy has done some research that indicates that the more that nonprofits are reliant on government funds, within 2 to 3 succeeding years, their annual fundraising drops correspondingly. I would say the more that you're reliant on foundation funding, you risk a decrease in your individual giving dropping correspondingly. So you need to think about that. Standing out in a crowd is clearly the one thing that you were most concerned about in terms of getting the message out. And when we looked at some of the anecdotal responses on the surveys, here are some of the things that you were doing. Working on cause marketing and developing benefits for third parties, having benefits sponsored by third-party organizations. Reaching out to civic organizations, schools, and churches. What are you doing to make connections within smaller organizations, like we talked about for Shepherd Center, within your individual communities? Some are investing in development staff. You know what they say, when the economy's tight, if you have the resources to do so, now might be a good time to consider some investment in the long-term future. Increasing public relations and visibility. Doing more fundraising and more types of fundraising. Broadening your base of support. What types of things are you doing now to help broaden that base of support? What are some of the things that you've had conversations with your boards and with your volunteers? Iris?
We're looking into doing a trivia party fundraiser with another organization in our community, something that we wouldn't normally do because it's not really geared to seniors. So looking at who our fundraising is directed at, it's always been directed at seniors pretty much. Mm-hmm. And so looking at doing something that, and ironically, it was just in Sunday's paper, a big article. I mean, we actually had the idea before we saw it in the paper, but where that's become real popular, and that reaches a different demographics that we normally not hear.
So looking at reaching new audiences through an activity that's more fun and engaging.
Right, yeah, we've usually done more traditional kinds of fundraising.
What about reaching corporate donors and others? One of the things that we heard repeatedly within the Funders Forum, we've got stacks of applications for money come to us, talk to us about other creative ways that we can help resolve your needs. That might be printing. That might be design work. That might be staff support. That might be consulting to help with financial issues. It might be human resources assistance and help. One group that I worked with in Topeka, a very large concern there, had to do some layoffs. And when we were looking to hire a development director, they very willingly connected us with some of their executives who might want to make a career transition. There might be opportunities there. Building new and cherishing old relationships. In all this effort to acquire new, a number of you were reporting, 41% were reporting new donors coming in the door. That's great. How are you going to engage them and retain them and at the same time appreciate and make sure that you don't lose long-time donors, long-time donor relationships? What concerns or questions did you have coming today that is even more contemporary from, say, June of this year? What are you thinking about as you're going into the end of the year, working on your annual fund, finishing up your meeting your fundraising goal for the year? Stacy?
Again, I work for Immaculata Manor, and we serve people with developmental disabilities. So it's an ongoing service to the same people every day. And I hate to use the word competition, but in today's economy, I feel like we're competing with, say, the City Union Missions, the Hillcrest Ministries, the people who are serving those who are losing their homes, who can't put food on the table, the children who don't, the backpack programs, those kind of the immediate needs that are caused by today's economy. And in gearing up for our annual appeal, I want to tell our story. I want to remind people we have an ongoing need. But again, how do I appeal our need versus the hundreds of people who have an immediate need?
Sure.
Do you understand
sure.
what I'm trying
you
to
bet.
Say?
You know, I guess I have a reflection there, and I think you just did it. Talk about the stories of what you are doing to make a difference in the lives of your constituents. Don't worry about the City Union Missions, pardon me, Calvin and all, but you know the larger, better known organizations. I mean, go back to the slide that John talked about where he asked about the asterisk. That was a Lori $8 million grant for relief effort in Darfur, coming right here out of Kansas City. It was a group of constituents. There, the challenge is connecting with those who identify with your mission and the work that you're doing. And remembering that donors make choices, and often their choices are made based on how well you've communicated with them and how well they've been appreciated.
I want to share a quick story. Is this on?
Yep.
Okay. I called an organization. This was last year, and instead of getting... this number, if you want to send us $1 million, press this number. And what I heard the person say is, I want to tell you a story about one of the kids. Got my attention, and in 30 seconds, they relayed a story about one of the children in the organization, which is far more interesting to me and I than just hearing the usual things you would. So think about those simple things. Lois had a question.
Well, my original question, I think, has been answered. When you were talking about the foundation, the funders forum, and how they were recognizing the need, it's similar to your comment that just anecdotally, what it seemed to me, a lot of the foundations were focusing on the emergency services. And if you were an organization that doesn't, that's not your mission, there wasn't necessarily that deep pocket emphasis for your organization.
Well, and I think that's one of the challenges. I'm not suggesting mission creep to try to paint your mission a different way, but looking at CASA, how is it that the economy has impacted the need for additional services in your area? You know, there are different slices of the pie, and you talk about how today's circumstances are impacting your clients in a way that donors of all types can relate to. I hear you there. I think one of the lessons, too, that will not necessarily help us today, but for the future, is it's all about cultivation and getting in front of foundation funders, corporate community affairs officers, inviting them, getting them to know your organization so that they're top of mind, you're top of mind when the need's there. John?
I have a question for the crowd. During this difficult time with the economy, what have some of you done in getting your board more engaged in fundraising? Can anyone respond to that?
Got one with Sandra at the back.
Okay. I have a school teacher voice anyway, so you could probably hear me without the mic. One of the things we've done this year that we had not done in the past is we have a day treatment services program at the Children's Place, so there are children who are there 5 days a week for 6 hours a day. And we've always encouraged our board members to come and visit the classrooms and volunteer some time in the classroom so they get a little bit more connected with the clientele and with the kinds of services we're providing on a daily basis. One of the things we did this year was connect each board member with a specific child, give that board member information about that individual child, that child's circumstances, family situation. Most of those kids are in foster or relative care homes. They've been abused or neglected or both or suffered prenatal exposure. And then provide them with updates on their child. In a sense, each board member has, quote, adopted an individual child, and we're providing with updates on what's going on with that kid, what kind of progress is that child making, what has happened in the child's home to make it harder or better for the child, and encouraging them to spend time in the classroom with that specific child so they get a better sense of what's going on and get more directly connected and engaged with the programs and services. And another thing that we've done, which is very different, is engaging them more in fundraising, is to ask each board member to make a specific number of phone calls, not to ask for money, but to thank donors. Because we feel that it's very important for us to reach out to individual donors, particularly not when we're begging, but when we want to say, thank you for your previous support. Here's some things that are going on at the Children's Place currently.
That's great. I think that we have one more back here in the corner, and then we're probably going to have to wrap up this morning.
We had our second annual golf tournament this last Monday, and 8 of our 11 board members were on the course or helping with the tournament itself. We also require all of our board members to participate in at least one of the sports that we offer during the year for Special Olympics, and that way they're involved with the athletes directly.
Mm-hmm. I think giving board members – oh, one more.
Do you have any statistics that show the fundraising expenses as a percent of total budget?
You know, that actually – thank you for asking that. Be strategic. If there's one thing that you might – that I really recommend that you do is go on to Donor Edge, now Nonprofit Search, and benchmark yourself against some of your peer organizations. I'm guessing that most of you in here are listed in Donor Edge Nonprofit Search. If you're not, I highly encourage you to do so. And you're probably checkmark reviewed. This is something that our firm does as a matter of routine when we're working with organizations to do strategic planning and strategic fundraising planning here in Kansas City. It's a great tool for you in terms of those expenses. Going back to what some of you reported, I do want to caution you that you are tending, I mean, I applaud you that you're not treating the downturn in the economy as something that has to ride on the backs of your clients. You're not cutting back on programs. Yet I want to caution you that most of your cuts are being made in the fundraising area. And to engage in long-term planning, thought processes, and discussions about what impact that's going to have on your organization a year, 18 months, 24 months down the road, because things are starting to improve and will turn around, you want to have the resources to be able to capitalize on that when the climate's ready. Lori, did you have a...
I just wanted to mention that best practices around fundraising expense to total is a maximum of 35%. If any of you would like to send me an email, if you would like to know other than, I mean, you can go to Nonprofit Search, formerly known as Donor Edge, and, you know, look at your fundraising expense ratio. But if any of you are interested in looking at your subsector as well, kind of to see what the average or the median is, please don't hesitate to send me an email. It's Larson, L-A-R-S-O-N, at GKCCF, and I'm happy to do that for you.
Okay, well, unless there are other questions, we're happy. Actually, if there are other questions, we're happy to stay. And I think Michelle Davis had, did you have any further announcements?
We're glad you're here.
Okay, thanks.